This Independence Day, join the listeners for a reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Udall Recreation Center at 7200 East Tankerverde Road, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th. Celebrate Independence Day at Udall Park, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Las Vegas. Oops, wrong gun range. On Wednesday, February 3rd, a man entered range 702, a Las Vegas shooting range, where he caused a disturbance inside and was asked to leave. The police were summoned, and three patrons of the range stepped outside to act as witnesses. The police arrived, ordering him to the front of the squad car. The trespasser then drew a screwdriver and attacked the female police officer nearest him. According to Metropolitan Police Captain Jamie Prosser, the officer's partner and all three civilian witnesses drew their guns and fired at the attacker, shooting him frequently. The attacker was declared DRT, or dead, right there, and the officer was treated for puncture wounds and will recover. No charges are pending against the men defending the officer. This has been the DGU Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America armed and free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free, some in uniform, some not, as neither the guest nor I have ever been, unless you count ROTC or Boy Scouts. And Bunker to France is a former movie stuntman of, I believe, 33 years, and he is a movie historian and somewhat of a Western historian, and he's kind of a fascinating topic today about the Johnson County War. And you also have a book by Mike Blakely, Too Long at the, what does it say, Too Long at the Range?
At the Dance.
At the Dance. And why is this an important topic for a program like America Armed and Free?
Well, primarily, like you said, history has always been a fascination for me.
A little more at the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Lower?
That's good. Yeah,
okay.
Right there.
It's always been a fascination for me. And when I come across this book and read it, I put this book up after I read it. I put it on my bookshelf next to The Big Sky by A.B. Guthrie, by Shane, by Schaefer. And it is, for me, one of the books that belongs on my Valhalla. It is a story of a cowboy. He plays the fiddle, so this is part of the narrative throughout the story, playing at dances, and that's why the title. But it takes him from the Southwest up into Montana with the trail drive, and it chronicles the Johnson County War. And so much of it has been written about, and not that much filmed-wise, but it's kind of... I would say blanketed in a fog of history, and it's a lot different sides of how it happened, what was going on. But for me, this was a clear voice. It was like, it wasn't the voice of the politician or the voice of the historian. It was the voice of the cowboy that was there. An interesting side note is it also deals with the
origin.
Origin, thank you. My tongue gets tied up a lot.
Yeah, and my memory for remembering artists seems to be going away.
The tongue and the brain, they're young. But the origin of dude ranching, which basically goes up in Wyoming, Montana, and it's such a fascinating, riveting book that I think it should be a classic. It is for me, and it should be on everybody's reading list, especially if you're interested in the Johnson County War or dude ranching and even the Southwest.
Had I known that that book was on the table today, I would have read it before the interview, but that's okay. I mean, I like to do that. I like to do my research and find out. My favorite along that genre is Smokey the Cowhorse by Will James.
Oh, well, again, yeah.
His actual name was DeVault, but anyway.
That is a perfect example because it's the working man writing about the work, and it's so much real or more real than the so-called expert or the historian or the anthropologist that's noting history and how it is. All you have to do is look at their work with American Indians. It is so flawed and just so much Eurocentric information in there that has nothing to do with the people or their customs.
I look for an author who not only understands the topic ontologically, but also understands it practically.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, can they come at it not only from the philosophical standpoint, but from the application standpoint? And one of the first thing, and this is stupid, it's simplistic on my part, but it actually is efficacious, and that is that I ask them if they own a multi-tool. A person who owns a multi-tool has a foundational understanding of how to turn a screw. Okay, or how to tighten a nut, and a person who knows that can apply the tensioning of a proper tensioning of a screw, or maybe the adjustment of a spoke on a bicycle, as the case may be, whatever the application is. When they have that, where they can apply that level of thinking to the problem that they write about, they write a more holistically accurate piece.
You just made me think. What if the Earps had multi-tools? OK Corral might have turned out different.
No, I think if the Earps had 1911s, it might have turned out.
No, it would have been more of a massacre.
It would have been.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, too, is I want to point out that a lot of people, their familiarity with the Johnson County War is basically, for most people, I think, from the movie Heaven's Gate, which covered it. But, and again, this applies to my way of dealing with history. For me, history is fractured.
Define fractured.
Well, you've got different viewpoints, different opinions. You've got the guy that was there at the time. You've got the historian. You've got the writer. You've got the politician. You've got the newspapers. You've got all of these different viewpoints coming in. I belong to Western Writers of America, which is a wonderful, wonderful organization. And part of the backbone is that they specialize in nonfiction. They do the fiction, but where they really shine is nonfiction. And you get the monthly magazine and you look at the books being reviewed and you get really great reviews. But you'll see the contrast, the difference of opinions. Wyatt Earp is an institution for writers. Every writer who wants to sell a book writes a book about Wyatt Earp, Jesse James, Buffalo Bill, Wild Bill Hickok, Billy the Kid, Geronimo, all of the standard booksellers. And I also, because I have a fractured view of life, I am going to write the definitive Wyatt Earp book. And it's going to be, Was Wyatt Earp's Horse Gay?
Well, it would sell today.
It will sell. It's Wyatt Earp in the title. You know, it's funny, like, just the last 2 years, Billy the Kid books have been coming out all over the place.
I was waiting for something with gravitas when you said that.
From me?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right.
I'm fractured. I told you. You know,
is it fractured, or is it simply different perspectives?
Well, you know, I try not to look at life and subjects and topics with a fixed prism.
Uh-huh.
I think you know, everything in life is like a diamond. It has so many facets. And all you have to do is change the light a little bit, and your viewpoint of that diamond changes. And so, I've never had a problem with people that waffle. In fact, I have more respect for them because I'm thinking, maybe they just came on some new information, and that's changed what they think, as opposed to the person going, well, he changes. Maybe you're the one that should change.
Maybe so. Yeah. Either that or you are a big fan of the Waffle House.
Oh, yeah, Waffle House.
Oh, yeah.
And they got the great Texas bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. Oh, it's wonderful.
Their Reuben is good, too.
Yeah.
believe it or not.
Free plug.
Yeah, right. 520-790-2040. If you want to call in and criticize our culinary choices, you're more than welcome to do that. Or if you think we're looking at the wrong end of the horse. So what makes the Johnson County War fascinating to you?
Well, it's almost the topic of all of the B Westerns and the early Silence and even some of the 50s. It's the big, powerful rancher. It's Shane. And Shane is a derivative story
from the Johnson County War?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's like taking one incident and it changed it. It isn't really the Johnson County War, but it took an incident from it and elaborated with it.
Oh, so give us the parameters. We got about 2 minutes before the break. Give us the parameters of what the Johnson County War was about.
It was about absentee landlords and immigrant settlers, not immigrant like in the sense that we think today of border crossers, because these were people that came to America legally. Some were even first or second generations that the government had opened up the Wyoming and Montana territories to homesteading. And the ranchers, the big ranchers that were there, they had been there, settled it. That's where the Shane story is. You know, the Rikers had been the guys that tamed the land, made it safe, fought off the Indians who had a right to be there, and also the latecomers that tried to encroach upon their empires. Well, with a stroke of a pen, the government said, okay, everybody can have 160 acres if you improve on it, irregardless of anybody's prior claims. So what happens is you've got this flux of people coming in, and at first it's a trickle, and a lot of these guys would tolerate it. Well, up in that area, it got to the point, because this was some of the best cattle country in the United States, it got to the point where the ranchers, the big ranchers, were feeling threatened by the small ranchers, because in number of cattle, they were equal because there were so many more of them. So, you know, there was a balance, but it wasn't an equal balance because the power and the politics was on the side of the big ranch.
Big cattle.
Yes.
So this was really a dispute of sort of big business against entrepreneurial effort in some respects.
In a modern sense, yes, but in the sense of that time, it wouldn't have been. It would have been the survival of the little guy who has rights and wants to defend his rights, and the power of the big guy who has rights, but not necessarily the rights that he thinks he has.
So this is, to some extent, children of a lesser cow.
Yeah.
All right. Stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. We're up on our first break, and that was a very nice bookend to it. And we're with Bunker DeFrance, and your calls are welcomed at 520-790-2040.
This is Herman Cain, and if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap Shop trains are coming. rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells, is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the Swap Shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
Hi, Mark Levin here. America Armed and Free. Sounds like a good title for a book. Congratulations, Charles.
Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. JPFO.org.
We got house logs up on the mountain. With the team, we hauled them down. Peeled them and we stacked them up. Out some bottom ground. Traded for some cattle. Turned them out on the open range. Skies were blue. We never knew how things were gonna change. Wolf Powder River, you're muddy and you're wide. How many men have died along the shore? When you find a man a wrestler, he's got to take a side. There's no middle ground in this Johnson County war.
And talking, yes, sir?
Good choice.
Yeah, you know, I did not know about that song until last night. It's by Chris LeDoux. And it's very well done. I'm tempted to play the whole song.
You should, and you should play more Chris LeDoux. He is very much in tune with the cowboy and American way of life.
So tell us who the players were in the Johnson County War.
Well, first off, I want to kind of invite your listeners to call in, especially those that have a strong opinion or they know some history, and especially anybody that has family history, somebody that has an anecdote from a great uncle or an aunt. They have the stories, the little personal incidents, slivers of history that I like and I like to share. But going into also into the history, my approach is, like I said, fractured. I don't run a straight ship. The major players, though, I didn't write them down. Well, Nate Champion is one of them, who was actually murdered later on in the thing. And the big ranchers, I didn't deal with names more so much as the incident itself and some dates and stuff. I'd like to read this one thing here. This is kind of my personal introduction, and then I've got some other stuff. A range war, also known as a range conflict or cattle war, was usually a violent conflict common during the 1800s and early 1900s in the American West, usually about the control of open range, land use for cattle grazing, sheep pasture, homesteading, water rights, grazing rights, cattle ownership, land rights were the common cause of these conflicts. It shows you, it's, again, we're so accustomed to thinking in a narrow way, a range war, oh, it's about cattle. But sometimes it was water. Sometimes it was the fencing, when the fencing came in, which played a part in later on in the Johnson County War. That was a factor. And the way that history rolls out, we try to make a straight arrow from beginning to end, and you understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more like the Colorado River starting up
and zigzagging
as the Green River and being fed in by all of these different rivers to become a mighty river and becoming, it's the history. Oh, basically, the history of the Colorado is from the canyon down, and it goes way up. That's the problem with history.
Americans want it all completed in a 30 or 60 minute program. All right, we have Gary in Bisbee who wants to make a contribution, and it's always good. Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you for taking my call. And my question to you, sir, is, was there any commentary from Theodore Roosevelt in the aftermath of that war? He had a caretaker, John Tisdale, that he had hired. But he had been in Dakota area some years before this all came to a head. In your research, did you see any reaction from Theodore on this occasion?
There was, but I'm glad you brought him up because this is a good illustration of what led into all of this. He was in Medora, South Dakota, or the Dakota Territories, actually, and he was there for several years. It changed his life, but one of the things that affected that was, and I can't remember the exact years, but they had a very dry year, and then they were hit with probably one of the worst blizzards that had ever been seen out there. They lost two-thirds of their cattle. It put him out of the ranching business, but it affected that country up there. One of the odd things, though, is that it wasn't as badly affected because that country was full of valleys, all kinds of valleys. It's just the topography of the land. And so herds were able to survive because cattle would move
shelter in the lower
in the trees. There was, when these lower valleys generally had tree stands, and one of the problems was that some of the small ranchers had fenced. Well, a cow, if it's being pushed by a storm and it hits a fence, you know, a buffalo will either push through it or go around it somewhere or another. The cow just stands there, and eventually he becomes frozen chuck. But yeah, there's commentary on Roosevelt had about it, but I didn't go in that direction, and I apologize for not being able to be more forthcoming on that, because he did comment, and again, I was focusing more on the actual event and the timeline.
Gary, did you have anything on that?
In a different area, do you think, among other things that you have stated, this is a multifaceted sources for contention, were one of the areas class warfare?
Definitely, because a lot of the big ranchers were actually second sons of English nobility with lots of money. That's how they could afford to come in there and buy up land like they did. And so basically you had a class that was, they were elite, and most of them were very well educated. So they hobnobbed with governors and senators and congressmen. And these same people welcomed that because these were the people that supported them financially and in the media. The media of that time is also fascinating because we talk about manipulated news. The news was not only manipulated back then, but it was made up because an event would happen somewhere and it would go out on the wire services and travel from town to town by the stagecoaches and the railroad. And we'll say like the OK Corral. When that happened, there were writers in the East telling you what happened, and all that they had for information was that it had happened. In other words, they were making up stories as they went along.
Well, according to AI, Theodore Roosevelt did not make specific comments about the Johnson County War. Roosevelt had cattle ranching interests and spent time in the Dakota Badlands in the 1880s. It is possible that he was aware of events, though there is no direct documentation thereof.
Thank you.
That's what AI says, anyway.
Well, that's one opinion, and I think it's probably, maybe not 100% correct, but it's probably fairly close enough.
Right. You know, I didn't try Grok. Gary?
No, I would just like to say thank you for coming on the show, sir. I'm going to look up your book again and read it because it's an interesting time of history. It's a time of the making of the magnets.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Gary. You seem to be knowledgeable about this. What caused your curiosity and interest in the Johnson County War?
Well, it was one of a few events, one being how Roosevelt had come out there, and I was going to originally ask if that war had it impacted him, made him the man that he was afterwards, that he probably would not have been in the war that he conducted in his future dealings and things that he did, if it impacted him that much to where it hardened him and made a character that you wouldn't find otherwise if he had stayed in New York.
I don't think so. No, it wasn't the Johnson County War so much as it was the his activities in the West.
Yeah.
The hunting, the camping out. It toughened him as a human being.
The rough life.
Yeah, the rough life, yeah. In fact, that's why he called it the Rough Riders, yeah. I think.
The other thing, too, is that I don't think it impacted him that much because he was a student of history. In fact, he wrote some of the best history of the West of that time.
Also naval history.
Naval history.
Yeah.
The man would read, from what I have read, would read several books before breakfast. He devoured books.
Yeah.
And he also was probably, in today's world, if it was Twitter or stuff, he would blow our president out of the water with tweets because this guy was a communicator. And if you look at him, I don't think anything bittered him. He survived the death of his wife and his mother on the same day.
Right.
And it changed him because he had to get away. He walked away from politics, got into ranching, found a new way of life, and that, I think, molded his character. And again, it's mythic, but you look at the cowboy culture, even the way it is today, and it's about individualism, and I think he would have looked at that with an open mind and an open eye.
Yep. Gary, that was a really good call. Appreciate it. The book is by Mike Blakely, and it's Too Long at the Dance is the name of it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a great day. Opens the line for you in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios at KBOI Bunker de France. Topic on the table being the Johnson County War.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and white.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the swap shop. Let's listen.
JD.
I just wanted to give you some insight onto our friend Mike at Perfection.
He's always got lots of new creative stuff.
I don't really listen for you anymore. It is for his new spots.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Well, it was us against the cattlemen. The years just made it worse. First the drought and then the tough winter Johnson County from Delta Curse. Then there came the story about the two dry gulch attacks. Ranger Jones and John Tisdale both shot in the back.
And there is the mention of Mr. Tisdale that Gary was just talking about.
Right.
Perfect timing.
You know, you were talking about some names. I want to run through a timeline because that brings up a lot of names. And the source for the timeline was timeout.com. It's a good source. Anyhow, we start with July 29, 1889. Ella Watson and Jim Averill are hanged. And that marks the beginning of the conflict. Now, for a lot of people, those names don't mean much, but if you say Cattle Kate, they know who you're talking about. And Jim Averill was a very small rancher, but he had a small general store. And she had a small ranch, very small, just a few head of cows. But the ranchers, they picked them, I think, because they thought there was their vulnerability. And they were spreading the word that Ella was a prostitute and that the cowboys were stealing cows and giving them to her for her wares. And that Jim Averill was marketing them for her as the kind of a fence. Well, none of this was true, but That was it. And it so outraged the small ranchers and even the people, you know, like in the town of Buffalo and the other little towns in the area, because they were aware of everything going on. It's the old classic B Western where the townspeople, you know, they cower. They didn't cower back then. They knew what was going on, but like most people, they just went about their lives trying to be uninfected by it until it touches them. In 1891, the Wyoming Stock Growers Association forms an assassination squad, and the first target is Tom Wagner, horse trader. Again, they're looking at people they think are vulnerable, but at the same time, they're trying to send a message. And there's a piece here later on, I hope I get to it. On May 5th, 1891, Nate Champion, who plays a very important role through the whole thing, is elected president of the Northwest and Saddle Growers Association. It was another association made up of the other side. On September 1, 1891, an assassination squad tries to kill Nate Champion. They're not successful. A couple of them got some holes put in them, and they expired. December 1st, 91, John Tisdale and Orly Ranger Jones are murdered. Killer unknown. Frank Canton and Tom Ford are suspected. You know, this is another interesting thing. Ford played a very important part in part of the early days of that, just like he did out in, eventually it led to his downfall. There's a subtopic. If you want to really get into some interesting history, look up Tom Ford. Say Tom Horn, excuse me. Okay, what do we got here? March 4th, 1892, invaders gather at Cheyenne Club and decide to invade Buffalo, Wyoming. Now, this was basically an army was put together by the Big Cattle Growers Association. One of their leaders went down, and they recruited in Texas pistoleros, gunmen.
And 23 gunmen.
Yeah, and some of these were lawmen. Some of them were just, you know, bar trash that would more
hired guns.
Yeah, hired guns. Okay, on the April 9, 1892, Nate Champion is murdered at the KC Ranch by the invaders. This is as they're making their trek towards Buffalo. Their plan being to kill, lynch, murder, whatever, burn out any small rancher they came upon. Also on April 9th, in that same day, settlers form a posse of around 400 men to find and stop the invaders. Now, the number 400 is disputed. Some say 200, some say 150 in between. Again, it depends upon the source. But they left from Buffalo, and as they traveled, it was again, like a classic, like Dew in the Sun. It was there, as the ranchers are riding to meet the people at the fence, more ranchers are coming in, and the numbers grow, and you see that it become an army.
Yeah, the posse summoned itself, the militia summoned itself.
It is. It's like Concord. You know?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. Okay, we got that one. And on the 10th, invaders are holed up at the TA Ranch, and they're after learning that the settlers are coming to stop them. And their number is maybe around 40, depending. And, you know, they're looking at a much superior force. On the 11th, the TA Ranch is under siege for 3 days. On the 13th, cavalry from Fort McKinney arrives, invaders surrender, and the war is over.
Yeah, the president got a phone call.
Oh, in the middle of
In the middle of the night. Actually, not a phone call, but a telegraph.
Yeah, and this is interesting because I've got it here also, but I'll put it in now. The governor of the territory, actually, it had just become a state. I correct myself. It had just become a state, had issued orders because at that time, and under the law of the state, a local sheriff, if he needed any help, could call out the state guard.
Yeah,
and
in essence, the posse comitatus.
And the governor issued an order to the state guard to disregard any request for support. So there was no official legal rescue coming to it. But that it was part of the thing that it really, you know, just, This is getting way ahead in aftermath, but this really did change the nature. I think it was a congressman or a senator that went in and woke up the president and told him
senator.
About it. Senator. He, in the next election, lost.
Yeah, right, for doing that.
And the other. But the election after that, he was reelected, and he spent 30 years in Congress.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's no different than today in a lot of sense.
Right. Well, today, today we have, well, today in modern sense, we have a judge who was impeached and removed by Congress for corruption,
mm-hmm.
who then 2 years in the next election cycle ran to be elected to the body that impeached him and won and served for 32 years. Mm-hmm. His name was Alcee Hastings, and he was an impeached federal judge who became a congressman.
What a wonderful footnote to history.
Maybe.
I mean, no, it is. It illustrates exactly what's happening in the sandbox.
Huh.
And this other thing, this is just, like I say, I'm fractured and I like little
okay.
tidbits. This was, you mentioned it early, War on Powder River. It was also known as the Wyoming Range War.
If you'd like, I can play that. And if you got enough material, I don't want to run over it. You know, I know you got a whole sheaf of stuff. But if you'd like me to play that whole Chris LeDoux song,
I would love to hear it.
All right, I'm going to play it. It's 5 minutes long and it'll take us into the next break. So here we go.
Some bottom ground, traded for some cattle, earned them out on the open range. Skies were blue, we never knew how things were gonna change. Oh, Powder River, you're muddy and you're wide. How many men have died along the shore? When you brand a man a wrestler, he's gotta take a side. There's no middle ground in this Johnson County war. Well, a neighbor stopped by yesterday while I was outside chopping wood. They filled me in on the local news, there ain't none of it sounded good. Said there'd been some cattle stealing by some no-count outlaw bands. We'd all been branded rustlers by the big ranchers this land. Well, it was us against the cattlemen. The years just made it worse. First the drought and then the tough winter, Johnson County been dealt a curse. Then there came the story about the two dry gulch of tanks. Ranger Jones and John Tisdale both shot in the back. Oh, Powder River, you're muddy and you're wide. How many men have died along your shore? When you brand a man a wrestler, he's gotta take a side. There's no middle ground in this Johnson County war. And then last night at supper time, the rider stopped by chance. Said the cattlemen and their hired guns just burned the KC range. Two men have died this morning, shot down in the snow. Now the vigilante army was on the march to Buffalo.
Well, the county was in an uproar, and every man saddled up to ride. Caught the cattlemen at the TA ranch and surrounded all four sides. They hailed a house with bullets, swore they were going to pay. But the cavalry came across the plains once again and saved the day. Well, they marched them off to Cheyenne. No one went to jail. Cattlemen were all turned loose and hired guns hit the trail. And I guess the only justice wasn't much, to say the least. Last winter, me and mine ate mighty fine on the cattle baron's beef. Oh, Powder River, you're muddy and you're wide. How many men have died along the shore? When you brand a man a wrestler, he's got to take a side. There's no middle ground in this Johnson County war. There's no middle ground in this Johnson County war.
The Johnson County War by Chris LeDoux. You know, it's interesting, Bunker. We're about to go into a break here, but Chris LeDoux died 20 years ago.
I know.
Well, of cancer.
And he was
a rodeo cowboy.
Rodeo cowboy, but he was a real Western historian, and he wrote some of the most moving songs about the West. And this stuff should be on every. If you love that music, it should be on your playlist.
Well, I'm going to start looking up his music, maybe looking to use it for bumpers or at least become more knowledgeable about it myself. But he was only 56.
And he has some really humorous pieces and parts of his music, too, especially the rodeo songs.
Yeah. Well, I am looking forward to learning more about that. But I've already got a clip of that song in the last break, so which we're going to take right now. So stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. We'll finish up with Bunker to France in a little bit on the Johnson County War. 520-790-2040.
Swap shop trains are coming. Rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
This is Caroline.
Happy chickens.
We have a 5-acre horse property for sale.
They're participating in the program.
Please make that part of the package.
A ranch with chickens. They might call that the chicken ranch.
I've been called worse.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m. right before Liberty Watch.
This Independence Day, join the listeners for a reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Udall Recreation Center at 7200 East Tankerverde Road, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th. Celebrate Independence Day at Udall Park, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th.
There's a whole lot of fighters at 2 o'clock level. Can anyone ID these fighters? Over. I see P-51s coming in to help. Roger that. Pilot to Bombardier, you ready to drop? Bombardier to pilot, roger. Bombs away.
That was close.
A little too close.
Hey, Buck, can I ask you something?
What is it?
Does any of this make any sense?
Sometimes it doesn't, but I know one thing. There's a real threat to our freedom.
You're right. Not a second goes by where I don't think of home. And I believe that maybe in the end, all this will be worth it.
It is. And there will be a generation who remembers us.
There is a generation that remembers the bravery of our soldiers that fought for our country. Because of the Masters of the Air and what they did for us, Perfection Auto Works has the freedom to provide the auto and truck repairs you deserve. At Perfection Auto Works, we strive for honor just like those Masters. 323-8650 and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
Whoa, Powder River, you're muddy and you're wide. How many men have died along the shore? When you brand a man a wrestler, he's got to take a side. There's no middle ground in this Johnson County war.
And speaking about the Johnson County War, before we get to that and caller Chris, I want to say that Masters of the Air commercial is just spot on.
Mm-hmm.
It captures, it encapsulates the spirit of that series, but also the spirit of the men who fought, and then mm-hmm. it relates it to today. That's a perfect commercial, in my opinion.
It crosses over.
Yeah, it just it punches all the tickets for what an ad should be. And I'm telling you something, nobody in this audience who started listening to that commercial turned it off.
No.
Because it was a commercial. So, all right. Anyway, to the phones. Chris, you've got a comment or a question about the Johnson County War for us, for Bunker.
Well, no, you just had your aside. I had a question for Bunker concerning the aside you just had where you were talking about bull riding champions
mm-hmm.
becoming country music sensations. Mm-hmm. And I had a thought, and Bunker would probably know, has there ever been, and these guys are the unsung hero of the rodeo, has a rodeo clown ever climbed up and become a country music singer or legend, or has a country music singer ever devoted an album or done a song about rodeo clowns? And I'll take your answer off the air.
There's been a lot of songs with the rodeo clown. Mo Bandy, if I'm remembering right, was a clown who also was a singer. It's a wonderful, there's a movie out right now called The Last Rodeo, and I highly recommend this to everybody. It's a family movie. It's very pro-America. It's about strong men doing strong things and also overcoming the inherent weaknesses that we all have. Now.
Yeah. And to that end, let's see if maybe we can accommodate that. And to
my
this.
Brother was doing so well in the sport of rodeo, and I told Whitey Schaefer, I said, I need a rodeo
Bandy.
Song.
Mm-hmm.
So one night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I got a call, and it was Whitey and Lefty Frizzell.
Oh.
And they sang this song to me over the phone, and I cut it. And not many people have a song with their name in it, one called Bandy the Rodeo Clown.
Who was once a bull-hooking son of a gun? Now who keeps a pint? Get out behind, shoot number one. There he does. Who was riding high till a pretty girl rode him to the ground? Any kid knows where to find me. I'm Bandy the Rodeo Clown.
All right, I don't want to take up the last couple of minutes of this show with the song, but anyway, there's one that was.
Yeah, so. I have my bull riding story. I think that may be a good way to go out. I was stationed up at Point Magoo, and every year at Point Wanimi, they have a Navy relief rodeo. And two of my buddies there, Tiny Billingsley and Ted DeWoodhead, we all decided to enter. And it was great because Tiny was in the saddle bronc. Ted was in the saddle bronc. Tiny was in the bareback. And I was the dumb one. I entered the bulls. But it's also my only claim to real rodeo fame is the bull I drew was a bull named Boxcar. This was a bull that was in Andy Arege's string, and this was the bull also that was in the movie The Lusty Men, the bull that killed Arthur Honeycutt, the killer bull. I drew him, right? And I thought I was a bull rider, because back in New Mexico, a local old-timer that used to put all us kids up on yearlings, nearly, we weren't really riding bulls, but we thought we were. So I was ready. I'm going to compete with the best. I have a picture from that. He's Boxcar is about 8 feet up in the air. I'm touching the earth. My toes and my head are touching, but I'm bent the wrong way.
That's funny.
But I also decided at that moment that I was not going to be a contributor to other people's, because jackpots were the big thing back then.
Mm. I wanted to correct it. I said earlier that we hadn't been in uniform. You have.
You have.
Navy.
Yeah, U.S. Navy.
Right. I stand corrected. 58
to 62.
What was your specialty?
I was a yeoman. I was with a countermeasure squadron and then finished up with an ASW staff. I was on one of the yeomen on the staff. And it was
shore-based or
ASW was second in command in the Pacific at under SINCPAC fleet, but we had a little more authority because we had authority over civilian shipping, because all civilian shipping, merchant and cruise ships and stuff like that, they were also obliged to keep watch for
submarine activity.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And it was one of the most fascinating things. I can remember they had a big conference there, and we were on Ford Island there in Pearl, mm-hmm. and we had this conference, and all of these people from the ship lines, the retired naval officers, I had never seen a Commodore or a Commodore's uniform.
Mm-hmm.
A Commodore has more eggs on his bill than an admiral. It was amazing. And we were seeing ship captains from cruise lines. They were wearing their uniforms. And it was kind of neat.
Interesting. I didn't know you were a sub hunter.
Oh, yeah. And this is the thing, too. A lot of people don't realize it, but in the early days of Vietnam, the Green Berets and the Navy were the most active. Because mm-hmm. we were moving stuff in and out, and we were also patrolling for Chinese subs, you know.
And we still used diesel boats back then.
Yes, yes. It was a wonderful time, you know.
Have you ever been aboard a diesel submarine at sea?
Not at sea. I've been in port.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see why people with claustrophobia or people of real high stature could have problems on a submarine.
You know, I actually felt a little claustrophobic in the engine room on the battleship USS Massachusetts in Fall River.
Yeah.
But I've never felt claustrophobic inside a submarine. I always feel so at home. It feels to me like a cocoon when I go in there.
It was probably a calling for you.
Well, I never served.
No, I know, but being on the sub was.
It very much was. It connects me to my youth. I spent a couple of years chipping paint on one to make a museum. That's mm-hmm. my real connection to it. But to this day,
familiarity.
Yeah, to this day, I can blindfold myself and go down the forward hatch on the silver sides and into the torpedo room through the escape trunk, and walk all the way through the boat. Through officer's country, through the control room, through the after battery, and then through the two engine rooms and the maneuvering room and the aft torpedo room, and not bang my head or my knees.
That's good. Now, let me ask you this. Which would you rather visit, a nuclear or one of the old diesels?
Well,
I know it's fish and fowl, but
They're not the same. It depends on the reason for going. I want to encourage everyone to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.